When you think of human genetics research, you might recall the success of the Human Genome Project, or the promise of personalised medicine based on our own unique DNA. But whose DNA is the body of genetics research based on? A trio of US researchers writing today in the journal Cell have warned that human gene studies are dangerously skewed towards people of European descent, with serious implications for the way that scientists monitor and predict disease risk in different populations. ABC science editor Jonathan Webb is here with more. Hey, Jonathan.
Good morning, Cathy.
Now, when these researchers talk about missing diversity in DNA studies, how serious is the skew?
Well, they published an analysis, a sort of commentary based on all of the genetic studies of a particular type, and it's best summarised in a pie chart, really. So this was GWAS studies, genome-wide association studies, which handily are all entered into a database. So they're able to have a look at that database and just look at all of the individuals who are involved in all of those studies as a whole right up until January of this year. And they found that 78% of all of those individuals were of European origin, only 10% were of Asian descendant, Asian ancestry, 2% African ancestry, and just 1% Hispanic. So it does seem to be a pretty serious skew in that particular type of genetic study, especially.
All right. And this isn't one of the discoveries of human genetics that we're all after, no matter our race. Are we extremely similar genetically?
Yeah, that's right. People, you know, one of the main contributions in a way that genetics has brought us is just how similar we are right across the world. No matter what our ancestry or what our background or race, we are remarkably similar when it comes to the sequence of our DNA. Race, you know, arguably is barely there if you look at people's actual DNA sequence. The percentage that we share is much, much higher than anything that varies between us.
But right. So why does it matter then that this group of studies are based?
Well, the variations that cause disease are also only a very, very small proportion of our DNA. So as an example, I mean, it can even be a single mutation, a single gene that ends up causing a disease. And the single mutation that accounts for 70% of cystic fibrosis, for example, in Europeans is a single mutation in a particular gene. But if you look at people who have cystic fibrosis who come from African ancestry, it's only 29% of cases that are caused by that gene. So most of the people of African ancestry with cystic fibrosis have a rarer mutation that we probably know less about. And you can imagine, armed with that knowledge, that would affect the way that we screen and possibly even treat diseases like that in different populations around the world. And if we didn't have that knowledge, which it looks like we might be missing a lot of that knowledge based on the skew in the data, we may well be not serving those populations well enough.
So what can we do about it, Jonathan?
Well, the suggestion in this commentary is that we could do a lot better. We could aim to recruit much more diverse populations for particular types of genetic study and to build those into the databases that are increasingly being used for these studies, and that it could actually definitely have a benefit not just for those underrepresented populations, but for all of us. And another example that they cite is a study that was actually done in Texas, which included people of Hispanic and of African American origin, which was looking at cholesterol. They identified a genetic variation that affected the transportation of cholesterol, and that's led to the development of a drug that helps everyone. But that genetic variation is almost non-existent in Europeans. And so if that pool of people in that study hadn't been a diverse one, we might never have ended up with a treatment that now everyone can benefit from.
Now, changing tack, it's been a big week for news about space rocks, with all sorts of findings emerging from a conference in Texas. In particular, scientists have revealed a lot of new details about two asteroids that are currently the subject of separate sample return missions. Tell us about these asteroids.
That's right, Kathy. It's party time for planetary scientists this week. The Lunar and Planetary Sciences Conference in Houston is a very big one in the science calendar, and in particular, results about Ryugu and Bennu, two near-Earth asteroids that have each received a visit recently from spacecraft, were the subject of a lot of excitement and a lot of headlines. So one NASA mission from the US has gone to visit Bennu, and it's a Japanese space agency mission, Hayabusa 2, which is visiting the asteroid Ryugu. And they released a real raft of findings, which shows quite a lot of similarities between these asteroids. They're similar in size, not exactly the same. I think Bennu is about half the size of Ryugu, but they're both within about the same. You know, one's a kilometre across, one's half a kilometre. They have a similar composition. They're both carbon-rich asteroids, and they both seem to be surprisingly rocky. A mess of boulders is the way that one scientist described what they've discovered when they eventually went to visit Bennu. But there are also some intriguing differences, in particular their spin. So Ryugu, which seems to be actually younger as an asteroid, despite being the bigger of the two, is actually slowing down in its spin, whereas Bennu is speeding up. And it's a bit of a mystery as to exactly why it might be spinning faster and faster and faster. They both have quite a violent history and probably arose from collisions between even bigger asteroids, and they're kind of both spinning top shaped. So they both have a history of, you know, violent collisions and very fast spinning, but one of them actually still seems to be getting even faster. So there's all sorts of interesting contrasts between the two, which are filling out our picture of the variety of space rocks and remnants from the early solar system that are out there.
Okay, we've got just 1 minute to go, but what's the significance of this work? I mean, is the ultimate goal here to get to asteroid mining?
There is talk of eventually, you know, trying to use missions like this to visit asteroids and bring valuable materials back to Earth. And both these missions are aiming to return samples to Earth. But if anything, one thing that we've learned from these two missions is just how hard that's going to be, because they've discovered this, you know, ridiculous collection of quite big rocks, which make it very hard to find a safe place to land on the surface. There's a boulder on Ryugu that's 160 metres across, which they think has probably been there since it first formed. So the rocky nature of the surface is going to make it hard, and also the sheer speed at which, for example, Bennu in particular is spinning. That's making it very hard for the American mission to actually land and collect its samples. So it won't make it back to Earth until 2023, but we should have some samples from the Japanese mission as soon as 2020. So it's a difficult bit of science, but exciting stuff.
Fascinating as well. Thank you so much. Enjoy the World Science Festival in Brizzy.
I will, Cathy. It's a lot of fun up here in Brizzy. It's a very exciting week.
Jonathan Webb is ABC's science editor, and you can find out more about these stories in the science section on the ABC News website, where you can also subscribe to weekly newsletters from Jonathan and the ABC science team.